Bob Hoy, editor and chief investment strategist of Institutional Advisors.
Tell people a little bit more, give them the scenery, because we're going to start off the show with this.
I can see down to, you know, in Washington State, there's the Olympic Peninsula.
Right.
It's hazy now, but you can see the snow-capped mountain peaks down there when it's not hazy. A very pleasant condominium building, so.
Yeah, I'm in one as well. We're recording from the condominium studio, and there's been plenty of topicality since our last chat.
I see an immense struggle by policymakers around the world to inflate stock prices. They're beginning to discover that their expansion of credit doesn't necessarily drive business or the economy. So they've opted to push up stock prices, and convincing sources say they have been buying the stock market, particularly the Bank of Japan. Now, this really is reckless behavior. Also, you've got the European Central Bank buying corporate bonds in Europe, and this is helping credit spreads around the world because, you know, you take a look at in our case here, long-dated treasuries, and the difference between the yields for those and the yields for corporate bonds and lower-grade corporate bonds and junk bonds is the spread. And that got trashed going into the panic that ended in January, you know, crude oil down to 26 and that sort of stuff. So anyways, you had then the rebound out of there, the relief, and credit spreads have narrowed terrifically. And then you also have another thing going on. The seasonal into June is a pretty reliable move. So then you had seasonal tendency in narrowing credit spreads. And now it's gone, I would guess, maybe 2 or 3 weeks longer than one would expect. This has been helpful to the stock market, as you expect. As a matter of fact, there is a difference between like a senior index like the S&P 500, which has made new highs, or if you go down to the NYSE composite, which is the NYA, which has not made new highs. The transports have not made new highs, so that's still negative on the Dow theory. Bank stocks have not made new highs. So the stocks that central bankers would buy, like the big cap stocks in the S&P 500, they've been buying that. So you've ended up with then, I don't know if you remember, in the late 60s and early 70s, you had the Nifty 50, that was the 50 big-cap stocks that the institutions were buying. And because the institutions were buying, nothing could go wrong. That peaked out in January 1973, and then the market suffered the worst bear since the 1930s. So anyways, what you have now is you got the Nifty 500 in the S&P, and people believe that because the central banks are buying, everything will be okay, no problems. But I think there are always market forces. This is really distorting things, Chris. You got a reliable calculation on the S&P multiple or PEs. It's up to 25. And you've got here now for the last year, margin debt on the New York Stock Exchange has been heading down. And, of course, the S&P went down with it. And now, since January, the S&P is up in margin debt for the latest report, which was for May, reported on June 25th. Margin debt is still heading down. So you've got a very lofty thing going on here at exceptional values. I wouldn't want to be a fund manager in this kind of a world. I mean, you just take a look at this thing. If you're a value guy, you're going to get 25 times multiple.
A 25 multiple. I mean, we shouldn't see anything much north of 16 to 18 on the S&P.
By the same method, in 1929, the multiple was 18. But and as Richard Russell used to say, at bull market peaks, he would say, I think stocks are going to go to great valuations.
He was a previous guest on this show.
I love the irony in that stocks will go to great valuations, which means back down to about 10 times earnings and book value and, you know, who knows, maybe even a 6% dividend yield. Because work with technical, good sound technical tools, you go from overbought to oversold and back again. And at the moment, crude oil is getting oversold. And we're getting a sequential buy pattern on that. I had a note a few weeks ago that if it got down to 41 and broke below 41, that would be nervous. And it's sort of in the low 41s, but it's coming up with stuff that suggests we can get a relief rally out of that. Now, that's going to help the precious metals. It'll help the stock market, too. But in the meantime, well, it's just going to come in and would help things out quite a bit for the next week or so. And then going into September, the fall, there is really little to be said for the quality of credit out there. Who cares whether the central bank's been buying junk bonds? Somewhere, reality will catch up, and often the discovery of reality can be made in the fall. So there'll be sunshine for a few weeks, and then one wants to also think about that often with the seasonality in crude oil, and it is not all clear on the highs, but you can have a high around mid-year and then another one in towards late September. But it's sure clear on the lows, often December, January for lows in crude oil.
One of my favorite metrics is a conglomerate of seven sentiment indices, actually in the last 2 weeks. One of the most overbought readings on that seven sentiment index that I've seen in 10 years. To give folks an idea, you know, all those trend followers out there, which is supposedly the smart money, the hedge funds, not to mention international and global institutional purchases, which you already alluded to, this could be a bear trap. As you already outlined some great fundamental reasons, but the technicals, talking about the put-to-call ratio.
But the one you mentioned, the seven, is that the fear-greed? It was up to about 92.
You know, we haven't seen anything like that in years, and again, you shouldn't see that type of reading on a legitimate breakout.
Also, the VIX got down to almost an unprecedented number. But, you know, there's a theme that we can pursue here, Chris, is that back in the late 60s, and you had to have been there, was that before that, financial institutions were mainly weighted in fixed income. Equity positions were mainly minor. And then interest rates started to go up, so then you're getting beaten up on your bond portfolio in price. So then the shift started into equities, and then in 67, 68, that became really the buzz phrase that with institutional buying of equities, there would soon be a shortage of equities. That was the story. Now, the other part of the story was that with professional managers coming into the equity markets, they would become much more stable because you had such quality of thinking behind it. That was the peak, and if you deflated by the CPI, the Dow Jones, the, I don't know, I think it was around a 76% decline, adjusted for inflation down into the first half of 1982, the end of that nasty bear market. And then that, of course, is when the action shifted from speculation in commodities to speculation in financial assets, and that's been the main game since. Now, that's a long time, but here you are now up to the point where you have central bankers buying the equities, and one could apply the same reasoning that these are very professional people, economists, whatnot, so you're going to have a very rational player in the equity market, but that's what they said in late 60s. Forget about it. No, I think that the bank, central bankers, their research departments, maybe the Fed's got 300 economists there. I don't know. But they really don't know anything more about the markets than a very seasoned veteran trader. So I think this is going to go to an incredible blow-up many sophisticated market writers are pursuing that theme, and it's David Stockman, and it's going to happen right now, but it won't happen until it happened, and I think our technical work will kind of hopefully anticipate it when we know what it'll take. And one of the key things has started to turn, and that's the yield curve, the difference between long-dated treasuries and short-dated. It's starting to reverse and starting to turn to steepening, which initially helps the banks. But in all previous big ballooning stock markets, when the yield curve changes, that's one big heads-up alert. And then the other is when the spreads start to widen. And I'd like to leave with our listeners that throughout all of central bank history, when you've had the cyclical move on credit spreads and the yield curve, and it's ready to change, it changes, and there's nothing the senior central bank can do about it. Yes, they've done a remarkable job of lowering interest rates, but when you get the different things like the spread and the curve, that'll be determined by market forces, and we've got a bit of a turn in the curve now, and no turn in spreads, but somewhere over the next month or so, both should be turning, and it's going to be anticipating the next excitement on the downside in the financial markets.
You've alluded to the banking sector, so I'd be remiss not to mention, of course, the headlines here, Deutsche Bank profits plunging 98%, outlook for the world's riskiest bank, i.e., let's not forget all those toxic interest rate sensitive notional derivatives on their books. This is a growing theme. We've seen it for some time. Of course, the trend had been down on Deutsche Bank for months.
Disaster, but they were the big bank that got themselves highly leveraged in all kinds of financial trickery and derivatives and who knows what.
Yes, but you know our top six money center banks here in the U.S. also have approximately $250 to $300 trillion in interest rate sensitive debt on their book. Okay, moving on to Ford, their shares plunge. They're noting they don't see growth and they're warning that the U.S. auto industry has plateaued.
That's the one I'm looking for. It's the last report, this coming, whenever it comes, on whatever series it is on light vehicle sales. If it takes out the previous low, and this one could, then that now, car sales would be in, and car production would be in the formal downtrend, and that is not a good one.
The U.S. auto inventory to sales ratio, I think you're referring to, tends to be a forward-looking indicator. If we look at 08-09, we had a plateau and then a peak, and then, of course, it collapsed. But I don't know how much of a forward indicator it is. I think your key takeaway point here is you're looking for a lower low and a lower high.
As long as it takes out whatever recent low was in the thing. I haven't got it in front of me now, Chris, but a negative number for car sales or car production, it wouldn't be good. And then also, you know, that there's a lot of recklessness in there. But a lot of people have been buying cars with effectively zero interest rates. But it's all built into the leasing package or whatever they're doing at a long term, you know, maybe out to 60 months or something like that. But also, depending on how expensive a car you get, they're kicking you back $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. So it's all become a borrowing game, and it's sort of in a smaller sense like in before Shanghai went bad, there was many borrowers who could not borrow through the usual avenues, so then they were buying iron ore and copper contracts in order to use those as collateral for loans. Well, then much of the action in the metals market was a financing game. And this is what you got now with cars in North America. Much of it, is, and you hear about it, zero interest rate cost and $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 up front. So it's a financing game that ends up with people holding an awful lot of cars. Like in 2006, it became a financing game. You could buy a house and take money out of the game without even putting anything up.
That's right. No skin in the game. 75-year unbroken, the longest unbroken bull market in the history of financial markets. Not a single percentage point, even a tenth of a percentage point lost in the U.S. domestic housing prices. It all began with Fannie Mae, and then it got a boost in 75 by Freddie Mac. It came to a head with the Glass-Steagall Act, and then finally 2002, when former Sir Greenspan decided to drop rates to virtually nada, of course, we wound up with the peak, the zenith.
Oh, yeah. Let's put it, the balloon is fully inflated, and something's going to pop it. My case is that it'll be further widening of credit, a turn to widening of credit spreads, further steepening of the curve, and a breakdown in crude oil prices, and they'll probably all occur at the same time.
On the short term, that could not bode well for the metals, but on a longer term, we usually see, typically see, those things occur with an improvement in the XAU and gold and silver.
Yeah, we will then be in the next leg of the contraction when the real price of gold relative to the CPI or the producer price index will go up. That reflects upon operating margins for gold miners, and they will make money. They've made their best money in history in the deflationary depression. Stocks won't go up when the big market is crashing. So then you got that problem. A plunge in the stock market in the fall will be in line in setting up the next contraction. The contraction really helps the gold stocks, but or the gold mining side, their profitability. But then you got the problem of buffeting for the gold stock. So again, even though the longer term, we're in a cyclical bull market for the sector, you remember we made that call in November, December, but there will be setbacks. We've got one of our little indicators now on the gold sector. It's showing a sign that we have not seen since 2011. So it's not going to be completely clear sailing, and it's the same thing as any other sector of the market. You go from overbought to oversold and back again.
Okay, as we wrap up here today, I presume you're also watching the Eurozone unfold in dramatic fashion. Maybe things have paused for now. Is this going to be a sea change event on a long-term basis for the market?
Oh, yeah, this is the politics. We've been in over 100 years trend to authoritarian government. Each country or region has gone authoritarian in its own way. It is interesting that the United States, it's gone recklessly authoritarian, but it's building up a reaction to it. So now what has happened on all three previous experiments in authoritarian government, the state can only push taxation to a certain level, public objects, and then they turn to currency depreciation. But what seems like a perpetual ability to fund the state is actually coming to an end. There are many similarities to the end of the 3rd century when Rome, which had been a republic, but had... it was a benign government. And then in the 3rd century, it went absolutely into a police state with the privileges, and the people threw it off. Then in the 1500s, it was the same thing, the bureaucratic expansion, power control, money, currency depreciation. They corrupted the only organization that existed. And then it reached its maximum in early 1600s, and then the public started to move against it, and this is what's going on now with England attempting to leave Europe, and in the United States, a popular uprising that happened to choose Trump as a leader. This is important stuff, and I think it's ending action for the experiment in authoritarian government, and the key to it will be failing financial markets. And each one of the passes, as I said, it took 100 years for the bureaucracy to grab all of the wealth and then, and with further ambition, create the inflation, and then eventually it collapses. So I think ending action on the political scene, very exciting stuff. I think England and the United States are leading in the potential change now.
Very eloquent historical overview, and I would just add one little anecdote here for our listeners today. The great central bank fighter, President Jackson, had two attempts on his life, and he fought them off, the perpetrators, and there is considerable speculation, and I think evidence, that indicates that they were contracts on his life by the powers that be, this authoritarian power you're referring to, that has its roots in central banking. As you said, we had 100 years of freedom, and that led to the greatest economic boom in North America, and now we've had 100 years of shackles. And who knows how this plays out? That's a topic for another show. Bob Hoy, it's great hearing your thoughts. Please tell people more about Institutional Advisors.
Oh, yeah, you can get through to us. Actually, it's just Google Bob Hoy comes up, or you can go into institutionaladvisors.com. Brian Ripley looks after inquiries, and you can try a trial subscription after a few weeks. If you like it, you take the subscription. If you don't, you move on. Everybody's welcome to look.
Very good. I look forward to talking to you again in the coming months.
Chris, anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.